Well, good morning, good morning. It's good to see you all this morning. I hope some of you at least caught the solar eclipse on Monday. Yes? Yeah? I saw some pretty amazing photos, amazing time lapses. Not sure you can beat my photo though. This is what I caught. Woo! Was that the same view for many of you? Yeah. I felt really bad for folks that were traveling into Austin or other parts of the country just to see it, and this is what they got. But anyway, we're currently in the third Sunday of the Easter season, and we're continuing to reflect on what resurrection means for how we live here and now. And so before we jump in, I want to give you all a moment to reflect on this question. When you think about a recent injury to your body, what surfaces for you when you reflect on the impact that had on your body? What did you feel when you experienced the injury and even the recovery and healing process, right? So I'll give you a moment to reflect on that, and if you're willing, go ahead and share with the neighbor next to you. All right, so any thoughts when it comes to an injury, the recovery process, healing? What comes to mind? What surfaces for you when you reflected on injuries to your body?
I'm not 18 anymore.
You're not as slim as you are? But, got it. Oh, 18? That too, yes. I heard something else, my bad.
Denial.
Denial, yes.
Waiting.
A lot of waiting. A lot of prayer. Anything else?
It's building strength back is painful. Recovering is painful.
Yeah, so the recovery process is actually just as, maybe sometimes even more painful than the injury itself. So last summer, our staff had an opportunity to enjoy some team time at the Lost Pines Resort, just nearby Bastrop. Thanks to the generosity of our staff care fund. And so we spent some time floating on the Lazy River, played some pickleball, some ping pong, even hit some golf balls on the driving range. And overall, just a really relaxing way to have some collective self-care. And then the next morning, though, my knee felt sore. And then by the end of the day, it was swollen. And so I was thinking back to what could have caused it. Right, like, did I really overextend myself on that lazy river? Like, somehow, just trying too hard. But then I slowly made the connection that it was probably swinging the golf club that tweaked my knee. I'll admit, I wasn't messing around. I was trying to hit that ball as far as I could, humanly possible. And those swings generate so much torque on your knee. And I had knee surgery for an ACL tear decades ago, and so I thought maybe somehow I re-aggravated it. And so it got so swollen that I couldn't even fully close my knee, couldn't squat on the floor. So I went to the doctor. He did not think it was a torn ligament, but he referred me to a physical therapist. And so I was thinking the worst case scenario. And during the first visit, the physical therapist asked me some questions. He did some tests on the knee. And then he told me, I think you're fine. It's arthritis. It's what happens when you get older. I was like, ouch. I couldn't really respond because it wasn't not true. But it was a hit to the ego, right? Knowing that I'm not in my teens or early 20s anymore, more prone to injury, slower to recover. And it's frustrating. And injuries are a reality check that our bodies are limited and slowly breaking down, no matter how much biohacking we try to do. And for me, in the church context I grew up in, right, the body and the spirit were always pitted against each other. We were taught to have a negative posture towards our physical bodies. Since our bodies break down anyway, and our bodies are not trustworthy because they're the source of all our selfish desires, and so our spiritual life took higher priority at the expense of our physical bodies. You know, most of our midweek groups are currently going through a book club and reading Cole Arthur Riley's book, This Here Flesh. And she beautifully reflects on how contemplative practice is tied to our story and to our embodied experience. That our faith should not be an exercise of trying to separate the spiritual and physical worlds. And this is what she writes. She says, the chasm between the spiritual and the physical is no greater than that between a thought and a word. They cannot be disconnected. We were never meant to dismember our selfhoods. My face is my soul, is my blood, is my glory. When we neglect the physical, it inevitably suffocates the image of a God who ate, slept, cried, bled, grew, and healed. And whether or not the origin of that neglect is hatred, it will indeed end in hatred. I want a faith that loves the whole of me. And that's the kind of holistic view, right, of ourselves that Jesus modeled and invites us to consider. You know, when Jesus came to this earth, he showed up in a human body, the mystery of the incarnation, right? Jesus being fully human, fully divine. And with his resurrection, he returned with a physical body that still carried the wounds, which creates a feeling of tension, right, that somehow our limited human bodies are good enough to hold the divine. And that should have some significance on how we view our bodies. And so the question I want to explore this morning is, as we consider the significance of an embodied resurrection, what tensions are we invited to wrestle with, to carry, to embody on our journey of faith? And as we look at the lectionary text in Luke 24 this morning, we find that the resurrection of Jesus presents the disciples and us with various tensions that we're invited to embody and practice. And so we start in verse 36. While they were talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." They were startled and terrified and thought they were seeing a ghost. And so right before this encounter, Jesus had appeared to two disciples on a road to a town called Emmaus, and they did not recognize him. And it wasn't until he broke bread, shared a meal with them, and they were like, "Oh, it's Jesus." And then he disappeared. And those two then made their way to Jerusalem, where all the rest of the disciples were hiding. There they find out that Peter also has a Jesus sighting. And so now there's a buzz in the room as they're trying to figure out if Jesus is really alive. And it's at that moment that Jesus suddenly appears in the room with them. And it freaks them out. And so he says to them, "Why are you frightened? Why do doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. See that it is I myself. Touch me and see. For a ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and feet. In the Apostle John's retelling of this story, he includes details about one of the disciples, Thomas, who would not believe Jesus was alive unless he got to touch the wounds and scars. And so here, Jesus is resurrected with his scars, and he's inviting the disciples, his friends, to take a closer look and to touch the scars. And what stands out is that he doesn't get rid of his body, right? In fact, the wounds on his body did not disappear, but they remained. They became a part of his body as a symbol of empathy that he is with us in our pain. Jesus was setting the precedent that the wounds we carry don't exclude us from belonging. His vision of community is not one where we hide or ignore our wounds, but one where we allow them to be seen and felt and shared. And that's how the process of healing and restoration begins. And so for us, we're invited to embody vulnerability in order to hold the tension of being wounded healers. Right? It's this tension that while we all carry wounds and scars, we also carry the capacity and the potential to offer empathetic healing to others. This is how Henry Nouwen describes it. He says, a Christian community is therefore a healing community, not because wounds are cured and pains are alleviated, but because wounds and pains become openings or occasions for a new vision. Holding the both and of being wounded healers is an invitation that Jesus models and encourages us to embody ourselves. And it's that first part, right, the wounding, the first part that can be difficult for many of us. Sometimes it's easier to notice or support the wounds of others instead of acknowledging and sharing our own wounds. For those of you who've known me through the years here at Vox, I've shared about, you know, my tendency to internalize my stress and not acknowledge its impact on me. And whether it's my ego or whether it's expectations, you know, I feel responsible to keep moving forward, carrying whatever weight is thrown on my shoulders. And it's difficult, right, for me to admit that I'm overextended. And it's led to very unfortunate consequences, like shingles, for example. And so my primary growth edge has been that it just intentionally checking in with my body, right, and the stress that I might be internalizing, and then to acknowledge when I'm in a place of unhealth. And these last 4 years in particular have taken a toll on me personally. You know, navigating the pandemic, all the staff transitions that happened here, including relational breakdown with a couple of former pastors who left unexpectedly. And it was, you know, survival mode for a very long time. And that was a case for everyone. And I think it was a few months ago that I shared a picture of myself during the pandemic when we were trying to figure out the whole online liturgy, right? And the response to the picture was very way stronger than I anticipated. This is the picture, I think, that I had. Originally, I thought it was bad, but I didn't think it was that bad. But then seeing and hearing all of your reactions was like, yeah, no, that was really bad. And it made me wonder, right? It made me wonder just how much of optimistic outlook and silver lining I was still applying to that memory and to that experience. And for me, you know, there were deep wounds that I acknowledge now that maybe I wasn't able to acknowledge or even engage at that time. Because I don't like to admit that anything is too much for me to hold. And so an attempt to be vulnerable, that was an extremely difficult and painful season for me. And it's taken a lot of care, support, therapy, spiritual direction, silent retreats, a sabbatical, all those to allow space to actually recognize and acknowledge the wounds I experienced and to begin the healing process. And as we've collectively moved through the process of healing and recovery, right, the wounds that I and others in this community have experienced, they did become openings for a new vision, like Henry Nouwen described. Because that painful season was one of the main catalysts for a community reimagining what a non-hierarchical structure and shared leadership could look like for us. And I think that movement and shift has been a part of our healing journey collectively. That's our collective experience of being wounded healers. And one warning, though, to keep in mind as we consider being wounded healers, because I've done it, I've also been on the receiving end of it, while it is a gift to hold empathy for others who have experienced the same wounds, it's also important to be aware of the impact of our own wounds. I'm not sure who said it, but I've always appreciated the reflection that we should offer care and support from our scars, not from our wounds. Because it's important that we allow our wounds to heal properly before we're able to offer any meaningful kind of healing to others. Father Rohr says it more simply when he says, if we do not transform our pain, we will most definitely transmit it. And that's the tension for us to hold and wrestle with and make space for. And so for us, maybe a practice we can try is just to consider what it means to embody vulnerability, right? Maybe find a safe person and share the story of a wound that we've been carrying. Maybe it's a physical wound from an illness we suffer. Maybe it's a social wound of rejection and exclusion. Maybe it's a spiritual wound of painful legalism or abusive theology. And as we share the stories of our shared wounds and bring them out in the open, maybe that will move us toward our own healing and invite us to hold the tension of living as a wounded healer for others. Look at my hands and my feet and see that it is I myself. Touch me and see. And if we look back at verse 36, it says that while they were talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." They were startled and terrified and thought they were seeing a ghost. And then in verse 41, yet for all their joy, they were still disbelieving and wondering. And he said to them, "Have you anything here to eat?" And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in their presence. And so the disciples must have been going through a roller coaster of emotions, right? I mean, they've been grieving the death of their close friend. They're afraid that the political and religious institutions are coming after them for being a part of this movement. And then all of a sudden, Jesus is standing there with them alive. That must have created a whole range of emotions and feelings. And I appreciate that Jesus leads with offering peace. Right? In the midst of their startled and terrified reaction, Jesus provides and embodies peace for them. And what stands out for me in the disciples' reaction and response in verse 41 is that while they were filled with joy, they were still disbelieving and doubting. Right? They're happy and shocked, relieved and confused, which is an authentic response, right, in stressful and uncertain times. And so for us, maybe we're invited to embody peace in a way that holds the tension of expressing joy and doubt. The kind of peace that isn't simply the absence of conflict or the absence of tension, but the kind of peace that actually integrates and makes space and can hold all the conflicting experiences and feelings together. You know, the Apostle Paul talks about this kind of peace that goes beyond our limited understanding, right? It's the kind that protects us even in the midst of conflicting responses and experiences. It allows us to hold the full range of emotional responses and still remain grounded and secure. And this is how Cole Arthur Riley reflects on holding both joy and grief instead of trying to replace one with the other. She says, "There's so much that is worthy of lament, of rage. Joy doesn't preclude these emotional habits. It invites them. Joy situates every emotion within itself. It grounds them so no one isn't overindulged while the others lie starving. Joy doesn't replace any emotion. It holds them all and keeps any one of them from swallowing us whole. Society has failed to understand this. When it tells us to find joy in suffering, it is telling us to let it go, to move on, to smile through it. But joy says, hold on to your sorrow. It can rest safely here." And that's the invitation to make space, right, for all of it through the peace that Christ offers. You know, I was meeting with a friend who had gotten laid off from his job, 15 plus years at the same company. And I got his permission to share this, but it was interesting hearing him process his experience over the course of a few months. You know, when he first got the news, he was kind of expecting it already, so it wasn't a surprise. And while he was sad about losing his job, he mainly felt gratitude, right? Knowing that he had been given a rare opportunity to grow and develop in this company for such a long time, to know that he would now have some freedom, right, to reset, to take a break. He viewed the time off as a sabbatical to allow himself to recover, right, to be intentional about his relationships with family and friends. And it wasn't until a couple months later, while he was traveling, that he began to notice that there was grief that was surfacing. And he began to acknowledge it because he had lost a big part of what his identity had been built around for so long. And he wasn't even sure if he wanted to pour his energy back into something similar for the next season of life. And so he made space to grieve that loss. And as he was doing that, he noticed gratitude surface again right? Because losing that external structure that he spent so much time and energy building was actually allowing him now to be more intentional about the internal life and the internal being. And so hearing him process the shifting emotions and making room for both over time helped remind me the importance, right, of holding space for the fullness of what needs to surface. And that we don't need to hold one at the expense of the other. And so for us, maybe a practice we can try this week is to be intentional about connecting with the full experience of where we are in this moment. Right? Whatever our life circumstance might be. How might we genuinely engage the joy and gratitude we might be feeling in our current experience? And at the same time, how might we make space for any grief and doubt and uncertainty that might also be surfacing in our lives? And then practice sitting with both, right? Not with any intention to get rid of one or the other, because that's the place where the peace of Christ sits and rests. And yet for all their joy, they were still disbelieving and wondering. And then we close in verse 44. Then he said to them, "These are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled." Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures, and he said to them, "Thus it is written that the Messiah is to suffer and to rise from the dead on the third day, and that repentance, forgiveness of sins, is to be proclaimed in his name to all nations, beginning from Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things." And so hearing this interaction brings up a couple things. First, it must have been pretty incredible having God in human form explaining what the scriptures are actually saying, right? There really shouldn't have been any confusion after that point. And second, it's encouraging to hear that even though the disciples were the ones who had been with Jesus the most, right? They got insider tips, they had backstage pass, right? Even they still didn't fully understand everything that Jesus had been trying to teach them. And not only that, but some of them had previously denied knowing him, like, or they ran away when the soldiers came after him. And yet, Jesus still chooses to entrust them with the responsibility of passing on the story of his life and teachings. And so for us, we're invited to embody Christ's teachings, even as we hold the tension of being imperfect witnesses. You know, throughout his life, Jesus showed a tendency and pattern of choosing the less than perfect to partner and collaborate with, right? Even with his own disciples. One was in need of anger management. One was stealing from their bank account. One was a political extremist. One had a lack of faith. Most of them had selfish motives. And then Jesus also connected with social outcasts and vulnerable communities. And it was all these imperfect individuals who Jesus invites to follow him, to learn to live in a new way. And for them to be witnesses would mean embodying their own authentic self, right? Including their imperfections. As I've shared before, one hobby that I've recently picked up is going to hip hop dance class. And the last couple of weeks, I had to take it up a notch because I have these drop-in class passes that were expiring. And so I had to do like 10 in 2 weeks. So I even convinced Rachel to come with me a couple times. You know, even though my physical therapy did fix my knee, I wasn't willing to test how far I could go. And they were kind enough though to extend my passes once I realized I can't do this. But one of the things that I find both rewarding and extremely challenging, right, is learning the choreo to a new song in like 45 minutes, right? You're just watching the instructor move by move, just repeating again and again, doing it without music, doing it with music, and just like doing this until you get it down. And he's clearly got a vision, right, in his mind of what this dance should look like. And all of us are just trying to replicate and execute the moves the same way. And no, I've never nailed a routine. I make so many mistakes. And yet something that our instructor emphasizes time and time again, right, is that we didn't show up to this class just to be the work or school version of ourselves, right? He says that since you're here, fully bring the dance version of yourself. And it's okay if you're not perfect, right? You will nail certain aspects of the routine and you will completely mess up certain aspects of the routine, but you need to be fully committed and intentional to dance the most authentic way that you can, right? Make it your own. It doesn't need to be an exact replica because there will be nuances that you should bring. And perhaps that's the beauty, right, that Jesus is inviting us into as well. As imperfect witnesses, like we have both the opportunity to live the teachings of Christ in our own most authentic way, and we have the divine grace to keep moving and trying even when we mess up and lose our way. And so as we close, my hope for us, Vox, is that we would wrestle with the tension that Jesus invites us into when we're meant to live an embodied life and an embodied faith, right? Within these physical bodies full of limitations and goodness, to become healthy, wounded healers, and hold space for both the joy and doubt that will accompany us on our journey, and to rest in the divine grace, knowing we won't perfectly embody the life and teachings of Christ. And so let me close with this poem by Teresa of Avila. Christ has no body but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which he looks compassion on this world. Yours are the feet with which he walks to do good. Yours are the hands with which he blesses all the world. Yours are the hands, yours are the feet, yours are the eyes, you are his body. Christ has no body now on earth but yours. And so we ask all this in the love of God our Creator, the peace of Christ, and the vulnerability of the Spirit. Amen.